Welcome to this episode of On the Case, the Law Society's podcast. I'm your host, Anastasia Stratulat, and without further ado, sit back and enjoy the show. I'm joined here today by Mike Kochkin, the creator of Be Savvy, an innovative and highly practical simulator-based training platform, and Oliver Lipscomb, an LSE law student who was inspired by this initiative and is now working closely with Mike. So thank you, both of you, for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting us.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much.
So I would like to start with the behind the scenes look at Be Savvy and what it's doing to help the young lawyers. So first of all, for those who may not be familiar, could you introduce Be Savvy and share with us the aims that it has and what it wants to change in this legal education field?
So Be Savvy is solving a simple problem. While a lot of companies are solving the problem of what the new generation of lawyers should or must study, we are trying to look at this problem from a different angle and solve the problem of how they should do that. Our strong belief is that law firms and law schools have all the knowledge, all the resources to prepare a new generation of lawyers, which is well equipped to solve any problems, technical problems, business problems, but some of the methods that I use to teach are a bit obsolete. So I don't understand how in a world where AI is drafting contracts, we still use PDF and PowerPoint presentations to explain some complicated stuff and explain how to use these tools. So we are trying to bring a new approach, a new tool, which we call simulations, which is a digital representation, digital version of real life legal projects. We would like to give everyone from law students to members of law firms a tool where they can get immersed into real life legal projects, meet virtual clients, talk to them, understand their problems, solve these problems, get feedback both from the system and from the virtual clients, and immediately become better at what they do. At what they do. This is our goal. This is what we are building. Oliver, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, after using the platform myself, I think it's about being able to practice those hard and soft skills in an environment that's not as high stakes as if you were on a live client deal and being able to take that work away and work on it on your own pace, but still get really high value feedback.
It seems like a much needed platform. And I'm curious, Mike, what inspired you to start Be Savvy? Was there an exact moment when you realized that the traditional legal training model was flawed?
No, I wouldn't use such big words like flawed, even though this might be the correct words. But I do remember the exact moment when this idea came to me. And this idea came to me when I was preparing for my own interviews for my own law firm interviews. So I was shocked that in order to prepare for such complicated challenges where you, a young professional with very little experience, face law firm partners, and you are expected to discuss some very complicated matters, mergers, acquisitions, all these changes happening in the market. And all the tools you had to do to prepare for these interviews was a bunch of, articles in newspapers or a PDF document just describing core concepts. So there was like a giant gap between what you were expected to be able to do and what you had to prepare for these challenges. So I was, and I immediately thought that this is unfair, even though I didn't have the solution in mind back then. But then, when I finally got into law firms, after failing many, many interviews, but finally got into a law firm, I started coding over there because already I felt that this is a necessary skill. I was interested in how it works. And I was amazed that when we study coding, when we code something, the feedback from the system, from the computer, comes immediately. And this feedback is very detailed. It really helps you become a better professional. And it also is, when you study coding, it's very close to what you do in real life. And I felt like, whoa, this is strange. Because in law, you might learn something, and then it will take you years to get to the moment where you can actually practice new skills, where you can actually understand if your knowledge is applicable. And in computer science, you immediately get this feedback. So the feedback loop is much, 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 much faster. And that's why my brain started thinking about how we can bring this computer science learning approach into legal training. And I think this was the moment when the idea of Bisavi came to my mind for the first time.
That sounds very interesting, and it's great that someone took this step forward and that you had this great knowledge of coding as well, and you're making a difference for all of us law students. And now I'm curious, Oliver, you're in the same position as I am, a law student at LSE. So what inspired you to join Mike? You told me that you had a very strong interest in his initiative early on.
Yeah, so I was first exposed to bSavvy during an internship at a vacation scheme. And a core part of the training there was using his platform. It was a lot of M&A case study type deals, stuff that you'll be tested on during vacation leaves and for assessment centers. So after really enjoying using the tool, being able to take the platform home, work on it in my own time, and then going back to the end of the scheming, being able to apply what I learned, speaking to the partners and the other associates, I was really inspired. I've always been interested in AI, and after the internship concluded, I reached out to Mike and thought, is there anything else? Is there any way to get more involved with the tool? Really enjoyed working with it, and I joined him as an intern originally, just helping him do some. Just testing out the development side, looking for bugs, any way of improvements. And then from that, from my feedback, me and Mike began to talk a little bit more and began to work closer with the tool and realized where at the moment the platform was mainly just for current trainees, or when during the vacation scheme, there was a real big gap in. Prior to getting on those vacation schemes when it was preparing for assessment centres, and after myself really struggling to find any reliable good resources to practice the hard and soft skills that I did during the vacation scheme for the assessment centres, really began us working a lot more closely together, which then culminated in our launch event at the LSE, which had a great turnout, and our new releases of bSavvy Plus, which focuses on the assessment center type of exercises to help provide a space for students to practice to be able to go and smash their interviews and those practice their hard and soft skills.
Well, I'm not surprised at all about the big turnout at LSE because I think each one of us law students have felt this gap that bSavvy is filling in the legal training. And I think it really goes back to this idea of a modern lawyer's toolkit and how legal knowledge is not enough these days by itself. So I know that bSavvy is helping students develop these human skills to stay relevant. So that's the area I want to look at now. So the employment landscape in London is becoming increasingly automated and impersonal. So long application forms, online tests, video interviews, algorithms. Yet through your legal startup, you seem to be doing the opposite by bringing back this human element. So how do you use tech to create more humanity instead of less?
I think this is a great advantage of a simulation approach, because in traditional training, traditional learning and development, we have to do everything step by step. So we first focus on the legal knowledge, then our second step is some technical knowledge, and our third step is business and then human. So we have to do everything separately, and that's why sometimes we miss some of the elements of this training, and people suffer from it. With simulations, you are able to merge all these elements into one big training experience. So when you are in a simulation, you are doing a lot of things simultaneously. You are at the same time listening to your client, trying to understand what is their concern, what is their problem, what is the challenge they need help with. At the same time, you are solving a legal problem because this is what you are expected to do by the simulation. You are then after you After you listen to the client, after you come up with a solution, you need to draft something. So this is also a part of the simulation, but it allows you to develop your technical skills. So as you can see, we are merging all this experience into one big training experience. And I think this is the biggest advantage for BSavvy, because we can do it very, very, very faster and to provide a much richer experience to people training with us. And as a result, allow them to achieve better results.
Great. And I especially like this idea of efficiency, as for each law student, their time is limited. So it sounds great. In today's recruitment system, something that I'm currently wondering about is, do recruiters genuinely still value this human element, or is it getting lost in this digital hiring process? I'd like to know your thoughts on that.
So I think definitely the human touch it still plays a pivotal role in choosing the new trainees and new employees in law firms. Maybe not because this is a part of the HR's playbook, but because whenever you, as an employer, and I'm speaking from my experience here, you see people who stand out. You immediately pay more attention to what they do and what they say. And it's extremely difficult to assess someone's legal knowledge during a brief conversation. But you immediately see if a person in front of you is passionate about what they do, if they are actively listening, if they manage to find a new angle when solving a complicated problem. So, especially now, when lawyers are empowered with different AI tools, preserving and even developing this human touch, your charisma, your ability to build relationships will be absolutely key. And to prove this point a little bit, we at BSavvy have really managed to automate a lot of our development work. So we don't actually need many software engineers to build the platform. But we still need people like Oliver, for example, who can build relationships. Because you cannot yet, or maybe at all, build a tool that will help you develop the relationships with law firm partners, with head of L&D, head of knowledge management, and develop it in a way so that they trust you, so that they believe that they can invest not even their money, but even invest their time into building something together. And I cannot imagine software doing it in any way. You need people for that. And this is one of the greatest example where you can see that your personal ability to build relationships is absolutely impossible to substitute with any tech tools we have today.
Yeah, I mean, adding to that point, law is a client-facing business. It is a people's business. It is there to serve people. So you're always going to have that human element. And even after speaking to a lot of people really deep in AI space, especially at Perkins as well, they all seem to agree that's the one kind of reason why AI won't be able to fully replace everyone's job, because you are just going to have that human skills.
Yeah, I completely agree. And there was one word, charisma, that Mike, you've mentioned that I completely agree with. And I think that it seems very cornered in today's world, or at least people, when they're preparing for their applications, they don't take it as much into consideration, when in fact they should, because it is, as you've mentioned, Oliver, a job where you basically have to face people, and that's the most important part. And apart from charisma, for example, what are some other human skills that students often overlook in their preparation, and how does BSavvy help them incorporate them back into what they're preparing?
Well, this is a great question because we at BSavvy are trying to target different skills. It's difficult for me to say like what is the key skill everyone needs to have, but I can give you a fun example of what we are working on at the moment. We're building some simulator templates, and one of the templates is about the skill of delivering bad news to clients. So the situation is the scenario is that you have a client who you have been working for a long time, but for some reason, the team failed. They didn't achieve the results expected. They lost in court, and everything has gone badly. Money has been lost, and you need to deliver this piece of news to your prospective client. And this is challenging because you need to sympathize with them. You need to be understanding. But at the same time, you need to protect the interests of your law firm. So you can't just say like, "Oh, sorry, we will fix everything. We will make sure that we will reimburse you everything." That's not true, because even if you fail as part of the legal business, you need to remember that there are boundaries that you need to be aware of. And this is like one skill. And there are dozens of these little skills that people need to have. But sorry, but your question was about the most important one. And the most important one, I think, is the ability to. This is such a difficult question, but I would think that the main skill, I don't even know if it is a skill, but to be able to work on the relationships day after day. And what I mean here is that it's not that difficult to be in the right place at the right time once. To listen to people once, to write them an email once. But it's difficult to do it every day, no matter what happens to you, no matter how frustrated you are, no matter how tired you are. The skill of doing something day after day, even if sometimes it doesn't work, even if sometimes it doesn't seem efficient, is extremely important. And it is extremely important in legal business because legal. No matter how much AI we have, we'll still have this monotonous part. We will be expected to do something we are not very much happy with. So I think the next generation of lawyers should remember that they need to be able to persevere and to do something day after day, even if they don't want to. That may sound silly, but in business, it is really, really important.
And I think even now, you see a lot of the hard tasks are being very, very assisted. Of course, okay, it's not completely gone. There is still the human element. AI is not completely reliable, but give it another couple of years, it really is heading that way. And I think, Mike, you are right. What is the only thing that can't be replaced? That human element, the connection, the building the relationships, the maintaining those relationships specifically.
Yeah, but this is why I'm speaking about this. There are so many things you should be good at. Building relationships, building systems, building things from scratch, like building new tools, building new workflows. And I tried to find like one common element that all these things have. And the common element is being able to work on them day after day, no matter what happens. And this is the core skill of building anything, and especially building relationships and building connections.
That's a very unexpected point and very interesting because usually these monotonous activities, you would think that AI would you would not want AI to handle them. But as you said, day after day, you have to do things like build relationships, which AI ultimately can't do. So it's a great perspective. I remember when we were discussing earlier, you've mentioned storytelling as one of the key skills in lawyers and especially in their applications. So why do you think skills like storytelling are now as critical as legal research or drafting?
This is an amazing point because I love storytelling. Because one of the ideas behind simulations is that we are finally able to tell great stories through training. And this is one of another advantages probably of simulations is that we can tell stories through training. But I think the easiest explanation why storytelling is so important is because the love for great stories is so deeply embedded into our mindsets that no matter how our society changes, subconsciously, we will still always be searching for great stories. Because stories surround us everywhere. We obviously have them on TV, we obviously have them on streaming. But even the most popular singers, the most popular sportsmen, the most popular people in business These are the people who caught our attention because they are either great storytellers or they're a part of a great story. And at the end of the day, the ability of any professional to succeed in their area is how great a story they can tell. And there are so many details to it because this is, for example, why I am a strong proponent of higher education. Because I think higher education and student university is one of the very few places where you can be a very mature person already, but you have time to think about such questions. What is a great story? What can great Greek philosophers tell us about storytelling? What medieval stories are great? What makes the French literature of 19th century great about storytelling? And that's why I think you are in a unique position. I know that all students are constantly thinking about how do I land a job, what I need to do, but this is also the time where you can really spend your time discovering what are great stories, what are the plots that really attract people's attention. And that's why this is my small piece of advice. This is what I remember about my time at uni, is that this was the time where you will have a chance to really study what a great story is and then utilize this knowledge and utilize this skill throughout your whole career.
And I think if you have a great story, then it's going to make people want to learn and follow the story and apply that in their own lives versus just reading off some boring notes or some boring lecture. You get them involved.
Yeah, I completely agree, and it's a very cute thing, cute way of looking at things, because I think every single person is susceptible to stories. I mean, everyone grew up listening to stories, so clearly there's that weak spot in everyone who loves a story. So now that we covered this human element, I would like to go back to this idea of AI. And I'm wondering how much should law students and junior lawyers really care about AI? And so to explore this, I'd like to start with the question of, is AI literacy essential for young lawyers, or is it just the latest academic buzzword?
I think it is more of a buzzword, by the way. I think that AI itself, of course, building an AI tool is difficult, especially building the AI itself, like OpenAI does or Anthropic does. But using AI, just the interface, just finding the use case, is not that difficult. I think that the interfaces are great, the pre-built prompts are great, and the generally, I don't think this is a big challenge. Obviously, for people who spend maybe 20 or 30 years working in the legal industry, changing everything, switching from paper notes to AI might be a challenge, but I'm still sure they will cope with it. I don't think this will be a challenge for the next generation of lawyers. I think the judgment skills are much, much more important and are much, much more difficult to develop. Because the biggest challenge, the biggest issue will be about looking at the text, at the document, at the advice generated by AI, and immediately seeing the flaws of this piece of text. And I think this doesn't sound fancy. Because it's so nice to learn about new AI tools and learn about prompting techniques. But at the end of the day, I think lawyers should focus on their judgment skills because judgment skills will play a much more crucial role in their career than their ability to. No, I think they will both play a very important role, both the AI skills and judgment skills, but obtaining judgment skills will be much harder than AI skills.
I mean, I think there is an art in drafting the right prompt and being able to use AI in the most effective and efficient way possible. And lawyers who are not using AI, but just as a matter of fact, will be left behind. So I do think there is going to have to be that baseline level of literacy. But yeah, like you're saying, Mike, I don't think it's that difficult and needs a whole course of getting people up to speed, especially with how well the interfaces are designed and made. Yeah.
By the way, Oliver, I'm not sure. So this is what everyone says, like the lawyer who doesn't know AI will be left behind. I think that a great lawyer with great judgment skills will be not left behind, even if they don't spend any time learning AI. Of course, a lawyer who has neither AI skills or judgment skills, of course they will be left behind. And lawyers who do not have great judgment skills obviously need to spend a lot of time learning AI because at least they will be able to do their work well. But I think right now there is a bunch of, like, I don't know, 50, 60 years old lawyers who will never touch AI in their life, but they are so great at judgment, they're so great at finding the flaws in a deal from just talking to the client, that they will be impossible to substitute until they finish their career, even if they never use any of the AI tools in the market right now.
Yeah, but I guess that is from years and years and years of experience for the new lawyer entering the market today, where most of the junior work can really not be taken over by AI, but very much streamlined and made far more productive. I think for us, having to learn AI literacy is a decently important issue. But I do get what you mean. When it gets to those top level negotiations and build those top level understanding the clients and then building relationships up there, yeah, you're not going to be replacing that. And the actual strategy that goes behind thinking about different business deals and whatnot.
Yeah, I think this point of that Mike made about how people were already in the who were in the domain for long enough, they almost don't even know how to handle AI, and they're still compensate through their expertise in the domain. And I actually saw a joke a couple days ago about the and I think from the movie Intern or something, where an old man was struggling to open his computer, and then they were like, he gets twice my salary and he doesn't know how to open the computer. So it's funny to think about this way, but I also fully understand Oliver's point, because in today's world, if you're not on top of these things, you're almost at a disadvantage. Not almost, but quite literally.
And it's interesting thinking, what would the senior lawyer of tomorrow, so our generation, when we're, getting to these partner levels and stages, how reliant on AI would we be at that point, or would it still be just off of our own brains?
But this is a good point, because we can already look, for example, at the CEOs of top tech companies. I like this example of Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook, is that his main skill is noticing trends. So how Facebook switched from computers to mobile, then they bought WhatsApp and Instagram right before this revolution of sharing online has started. Then he tried to get into metaverse. So you may disagree with me, but I will still believe that people at the very top, even in 20 years, will not be making decisions based on AI, but based on how they understand the world around them. Obviously, not everyone will be there, and I think very, very, very few people will be at this level. And that's why people who are lower, they obviously need to use the tools, the tech tools, the AI. But maybe even in 20 years, the top level professionals will still be using their own judgment instead of AI tools to make decisions.
Yeah, and from a certain perspective, I think that it might even make you more distinct compared to other people to be able to maintain this judgment that it seems a lot of people are getting replaced with AI. So I completely agree. But if we do focus on some skills that law students should develop so as to not be behind, what are the most realistic AI tools a law student should learn to use before graduating, would you say?
Now, I can hardly understand what it means to master a legal tech tool. So legal AI tools. So if we take some major tools in the market, like something they do at Harvey or Legora, I think it will take you 2 or 3 days to master them, because otherwise they are bad tools. Because there are very clever people working at Harvey and Legora making sure that everyone knows how to use them, how to plug them into their daily workflows. But if you want to speak about the tech skills, I would ha highly recommend going through some kind of a computer science course just to rewire your thinking. Because thinking about data, thinking about understanding data types, understanding databases, understanding functions, and this approach to life through this engineering lens will really rewire how you tackle problems. And this is a much, much, much higher level than just understanding legal AI. This is about you being able to look at the world from two perspectives. One from the legal perspective, from the perspective of what is right, what is wrong, what is just, what is unjust. And the other lens you will have after a good, extensive computer science course is that every problem is solvable, and that you have different tools to solve them, and that you have and that but in order to solve a problem, you need to think about what is the input, what is the output, what is the processing mechanisms, what is the memory you have, and you will be able to build workflows and products out with this thinking much, much, much faster, even if you are in law firm. And this is not a fancy tool. I spent 5 years coding to finally say to myself, like, probably I understand how to do that. You will not achieve this in a week. You will not achieve this in 2 weeks. But if you want to embark on a journey of becoming a tech-savvy lawyer, a lawyer who wants to build things, who wants to automate stuff, who wants to consult the best tech companies in the world, invest in 2, 3, or 4 years of your career into better understanding what IT is, how data is managed, what is API, what is processing, why do all these gigantic companies right now invest hundreds of billions of dollars into making these plants where they produce energy and electricity to power up some other tools? So this is very important. And this may sound bad because I'm not offering you a free device which will just rebuild you as a lawyer in a day. But if you really want to pursue this journey, invest a couple of years and you will definitely be on a very different level from everyone in the market.
That's great news. And especially one point that you made, I found really reassuring. The fact that these tools that AI firms use, like Harvey, they're easy to understand, and that's their value, basically. So that's very, very good to know for someone who might not be as of an expert as you might have been when you were already coding at the beginning. And I'm sure that other students feel the same way. Another aspect I was curious about, you answered my question to an extent when you've mentioned judgment, but I don't know if you have anything you want to add about this limit where learning AI is no longer useful for a lawyer and the lawyer needs other skills to compensate. So do you see, apart from this judgment, are there any other skills that the lawyer has to develop for more than AI?
I think there are so many skills. So I will speak about one skill and I will just then want to hear what Oliver thinks about it. But I would say that the skill of writing. So generating a text is so, so poor experience in real life. But being able to write in different situations, write for different audiences. What is the difference between writing a memo to a client and writing a post on LinkedIn that attracts attention? And then writing an email to your member of parliament to solve a problem, and then writing to someone else. So even if we substitute everything with AI, we'll still have to at least analyze the kind of writing AI provides to us. And it's important to see where AI failed or where our prompt was poor and we didn't get what we expected. So I would definitely say that writing is extremely important. Then speaking. Maybe speaking is important because This is the easiest way to land a job, to attract clients, to be more recognizable in the market. And speaking doesn't come natural. You have to do. So again, very, very simple pieces of advice, but they are the foundations. And I love this, what they call, again, in the Silicon Valley, they call it high-level thinking, because you, instead of just going into details, you just to try to analyze the high-level trends, the high-level principles that you can rely on. And definitely one of the principles I recommend everyone to be aware of is that you need to be a good writer and you need to be a good speaker to become a great lawyer.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there, Mike. But I would also like to add, I mean, especially being around all the lawyers in LSE, most of which are trying to break into corporate law, one of the biggest skills is got to come back to that that buzzword of commercial awareness, but more specifically about what businesses actually want to happen, what different factors affect different wants and needs, and what does a client want, and how does this business deal affect every other facet of everything. I think just really being able to understand the landscape and the industry and what people actually want, which I guess goes back to that speaking point, is very important.
I would even add something, just in order to. I think I was very boring, like speaking about it's important to be a good speaker and to be a good writer. So in order to, I will jump to a completely different direction. In a completely different direction, it's important to be to build the skill of being interesting, because you need to communicate to so many people to become a part of a law firm. And I know when I was completing interviews, and I had to complete like six or seven interviews in a row. And the first five of them were about my problem-solving skills and analytical skills. And I was completely exhausted after these five, after those interviews. I could hardly remember anything happening in the legal market. And the last two interviews were devoted specifically to understanding if I'm an interesting person. Because whenever they make these decisions on whether to hire a trainee or promote them to a newly qualified lawyer, they think about, like, would I want to spend night after night working with this person? Are they boring? Are they frustrated? Are they speaking nonsense all the time? And so it's very important to be a person that other people's like, and that people want to spend time with, especially when they are tired, especially when things are going wrong. And to become interesting, become a likable person, you need to develop empathy. And even though I think empathy is a bit of a buzzword itself today, having the ability of sympathizing with people, understanding what matters to them, not being selfish, listening to them is extremely important. And this is a very practical advice and practical skill if the people listening to us want to become a part of a big law firm.
Yeah, I think I would agree with both of you, and I think that law is offers this unique intersection between requiring both a strong human element, empathy, and all these skills being interesting, and in the same time having this critical judgment, this pragmatism. So I think it's very interesting, and it's worth paying attention to having this balance. And people, I think, look more towards this critical judgment and AI skills, whatever. And it's interesting to know that there's a different side that they care about, as you said. So now I would like to focus briefly on this idea of the law firms versus the legal startup, because both of you started your career in with law firms. Oliver, you're kind of doing both right now. So you have this unique mix, and maybe other students are interested in these two sides, or even the intersection of law and tech, like Oliver and Mike as well, obviously. But from your experience, and for students planning their first step into the legal world, how should they choose between a law firm internship and one in a legal tech startup?
I think it's very easy to decide, because if you there are two approaches to how you want to handle your career. First is you want to be a part of something big, and you are willing to be a part of this big system. And being a part of a big system means delegating part of your life, part of your decision making, to other people, hoping that you will be taught a lot of useful stuff. But the good thing is that if you are a part of a big law firm, you just follow the flow, because the system inside the law firm is built well enough to guide you to where you should be in 1 or 2 years. It won't be like you have a playbook written in front of you, but you will always have people in the team who can answer your questions. Being in a startup is a very different experience, because coming to a startup is, when you come to startup, you don't delegate anything. You are given freedom, on the contrary. But while you have this freedom, do not expect to have the framework, to have the playbook guiding you along the way. You are in charge of making your own decisions. You are in charge of making sure that you grow in this team, because no people in this team will promote you just because you stayed with the startup for a couple of years. They want to see results. They want to see how you grow from junior to middle level to senior level, even without a lot of input from the senior team, because they often just don't have resources to focus on this. And I think this is a very easy division. So if you are a person who wants to be a part of something big, you are willing to fight through this competition, and you are okay with following other people's lead, then being a part of a law firm is great. But if for some reason you are so self-confident that you think that you know exactly what you need to do, you don't need a lot of advice, and you want to be free, you want to be flexible, you want to decide what to do next day or in a week, being in a startup is great.
That's very interesting, and it's interesting that it's much less predictable in a startup from what you're telling me. So another thing that I'm wondering is this unpredictability and the fact that it offers you more responsibility early on. What is an example, a specific example of a responsibility or something that a startup exposes you to that it would take you years to have in a law firm?
I think it depends on the role, obviously, because it depends on what team you are a part of. Because if it's a coding team, you are obviously coding more than if you're in Google, or if it's a business development team, obviously, you will be able to approach clients from day one instead of just waiting for a couple of years to first meet clients. So, yeah, I think no matter what team you come to, you have more exposure. And I even think that even if you don't have exposure, being proactive and asking for this exposure will be supported by the senior management team.
Very interesting. Oliver, is there anything you want to add from your experience of still being in law school and starting out at a law firm and at the same time joining Mike on Be Savvy?
I have to say, it's been very exciting seeing how each part intersects. I'm almost, wearing three different hats. And yeah, like Mike was saying, it's nice to see how the big institutional organization run things and how the real big money is made, but also to be able to apply that to a startup and also to be able to get exposure to go into, different meetings and meeting lots of different people, and even coming on podcasts. It definitely switches up just from, standard studying or going to the open days and whatnot. So really been enjoying the experience so far, and to be able to actually build something and then have my actions be directly recognized and have an impact. That's what I like. That's what I like, having an actual impact.
But I would add that sorry, I would add that here that the downside of being a part of a startup is that you constantly are tortured by the idea in your head that what you do is wrong. Because when you're part of a big team, of a big company, you always have these best practices coming from the top. So you have different directors and vice presidents which make sure that all the processes are good. They're not necessarily good, but they are expected to be good. In a startup, even if you are when you are the CEO, and when you do something, you write code, you approach clients, no one can validate if what you are doing is actually right. So you always think like, okay, we do have some clients. We did build a decent product, but very often when I look at my code, I wonder, is it like a good code? And if a vice president of Facebook would take a look at it, they would say like, who wrote it? This is so bad. And you always have this idea in your head, which you need to find a way to put up with because it will be there until you become a big company.
Yeah, well, I understand what you're saying. And although I was never in this position, I can imagine the stress, but in the same time, I suppose the satisfaction of achieving something and filling in a gap that you've noticed is much higher than being in this predictable life at the law firm. So now I would like to move on to this idea of the perfect online course. What makes an online course effective in 2025? And in your opinion, what are the biggest weaknesses that you see in most online legal courses today?
I think we spoke about it already because I think there are three pillars to a great online course. This is the story, this is the practical part, and this is the background information that you need to have access to. So the balance between these three elements is extremely important because if you don't have the story, it's all about just consuming information. If you don't have the practical part, you don't develop the new skills. If you don't have the background information, you are just getting lost. And in I can speak for hours about it, but I really love this example that I learned about from the games design workshop I was a part of. So there were people who were really designing computer games, and they were speaking about this very important principle in computer design, in the game design, which is called the complexity curve. It means that when you go through a game, you should start at a point where the complexity is very low because you don't know anything about the game. But then once you progress through the game, you learn more, and the complexity is expected to rise. And if this principle is not followed, then the game will very soon become very boring. Because if you progress, you get more experience, but there are no challenges. That's boring. And on the contrary, if you progress and the game quickly becomes very challenging, it again becomes not interesting to go through. And the same goes for courses. So this is why I hate this video plus quizzes structure, because it violates this principle completely. You learn something, you go through a video, so no complexity, you just learn something, and then you get something usually very, very, very easy. So this is just bad experience, and that's why in simulation we have different tools which guide you, and which are providing you knowledge and providing you practical experience at the same time. And we can design to make sure that we first offer you some simple tools, like a case study. Just go answer some questions, understand the terms, understand the principles behind the topic of this simulator. And then you can get to a more complicated level, like make changes to a document. You already have more experience, you are ready for this, make changes. And then once you learn something, once you make changes to the document, talk to the client. And you are very experienced because you have already completed the case study. You have made changes to the document. We know that you are ready. And you are getting to the level where you are talking to a client and you feel so much enjoyment from this process because we really follow this complexity curve principle. Because you have a lot of experience and you are solving a very, very complicated problem, like talking to a client in real time. So I think these principles should become core to all the courses people go through, because otherwise, it's just so boring to go through another course.
Because I think even the current offerings of interactive courses, it's not providing the live feedback as you would with Be Savvy and being able to really go with it and learn as you go versus just write a load of stuff and then submit it, then wait for some feedback that is not going to help you actually develop the skill exactly when you need it. And yeah, it's about keeping the attention, like you were saying.
Yeah, I completely agree. And especially with this idea of getting live feedback, I think it's very important, especially since in my own experience, I've had some situations with online tests for preparation that didn't even give me an evaluation of what I wrote. So I think it was not very useful.
Yeah, it's like you do a quiz. Okay, you get the answer right or wrong. You don't know exactly how you can improve the answer, what went wrong exactly. Can I draft it in a different way? Tasks that other online courses aren't going to be nowhere near specific as what you really need in these trainee vacation scheme type roles.
Yeah, I completely agree. And now I want to move to Be Savvy more specifically again. And I know it had a lot of developments recently. So it has been evolving rapidly. And I would also like to know some of the biggest changes and what they mean for the platform and for its users.
Yes, that's true. We have gone through a number of changes recently because we pursue a very simple goal. We want the adoption of BeSavvy to progress faster. And since we are offering a very new perspective into how training should be conducted, it's difficult for people to embrace this approach right away. So our job is to make sure that they learn it easily. So our initial understanding is that we should come to law firms, we should come to law schools, and we should say that we have built a great platform, let's build something together. And obviously there were some first users who liked this idea, who were eager to invest their time into building these tools with us. But we quickly saw that we cannot achieve rapid growth if we just give them the platform and give them the flexibility to build, because it's difficult. It's difficult to build a great simulation from scratch. So what we are doing right now is we are trying to build our own custom simulations for all the clients we have to bring this simulation experience to a wider audience at a faster speed. So this is why we have BizSavvy Plus. That's why we have this platform where law students can practice different legal skills before they go to assessment centers. That's why we have simulation templates. These are the playgrounds which law firms can start with. So these are already good simulations that we build and that can offer this amazing training experience. But law firms can tweak them a little bit to make the experience more close to what they do at this particular law firm. And we already see that law firms are more likely to try this approach rather than building something from scratch. And the third biggest development was building our knowledge engine in the law in this simulation. Because before, when we were building simulations, we were just uploading some information that we get from our clients in order to power the simulation. So those were, for example of documents or examples of case studies that are already used in law firms, and we just made them more digital, more responsive with better feedback. But right now, we recently started a very interesting project where we collect how best lawyers in the world think. So we have people, we have interns looking through data, looking through video lectures, looking through books, trying to find the patterns of how great lawyers solve problems, how they approach problems, how they talk to their clients, how they talk to their colleagues, in order to use this knowledge inside our platform, so that to every prompt, to every question that is written by our users, we can use this knowledge from the best lawyers in the world to provide unique and very useful answers rather than LLM generated generic answers.
Yeah, it's great that you have it so specific and tailored to exactly what they're looking for in the legal workforce. And in line with this, I'm curious to ask, what's your vision for Be Savvy over the next, say, 3 to 5 years, and how can students get involved?
3 to 5 years is a long period, so let me just speak about the next 1 or 2 years because legal tech is progressing very quickly, and we want to be a legal tech tool, not an ad tech tool. Because education technology platforms show that when you are building a generic tool, it's hard to deliver very accurate, very high level experience. You need to focus on a particular group of people to build the tools specifically for them. That's why we consider ourselves to be a legal tech tool. So yeah, legal tech is progressing very quickly. It's hard to imagine what's going to happen in 3 to 5 years. But speaking about the next 1 or 2 years, we will be focusing a lot on voice simulations, or maybe on video simulations if we get this technology. Having text is nice, but to really bring this unique experience of being in court, of talking to client, you need voice and you need video, because everything else is just preparation for this big shift, this big change in the industry. And as for students, I think there are a great number of how they can get involved. They can join BeSavvy Plus just to get their weekly dose of simulations, to use them to practice, to develop their proofreading, analytical skills, legal AI skills, and hard skills, and many, many others. But we also ask people to come to us as interns. So as I've said, our interns are doing a very interesting job. Unlike many other legal tech startups where they need to go through boring documents trying to find what is wrong, what is right, we ask people to come to go through the best lectures in the world, through the best books in the world, and try to find these unique learning patterns. And then together, we upload them into the engine in our platform, and they can see how their input, how their research is improving the feedback which is provided to our clients, which is, so as we talk to today, is great from different perspective. It's great because you learn a lot. You learn how to be an amazing lawyer, but you also see how your efforts improve the system for many, many users of BeSavvy.
That sounds great, and I'm sure you inspired many students who are interested in this tech area and making this tangible change. Oliver, if you want to add anything.
No, I think Mike, he summed it up pretty well there. Just if you want to get involved, BeSavvy Plus is the main gateway for students to be able to practice hard skills, soft skills, but also going beyond the skills, being able to practice those skills in particular contexts are really helpful. So within merger and acquisition context, within private equity, digesting news articles, really getting a whole holistic view of what's needed to be able to do well and exceed in these corporate environments.
Sounds good. So these were all my questions. If feel free to add anything you'd like, if you do have anything else.
So just to sum up, I think we are going through very interesting times in terms of tech development. But my piece of advice will be either go deep into tech or either go deep into being a great lawyer, being a great communicator, being a great thinker. Even though everyone is speaking about legal AI, everyone is speaking about legal tech too, just being aware of something is not enough. Because you can easily think about a lawyer who just follows all the trends in real estate. It's obviously not enough to be a great real estate lawyer. So the same goes for the people who listen to us. I do encourage everyone to go into legal AI, into legal tech. But if you want to go deep. Go very, very deep, because this will make you an amazing specialist, an amazing lawyer. Or if you don't want to do that, this is not the end of the world. Great communicators will be needed as much as legal AI professionals. And people who are able to see the flaw in a deal structure at one glance will be also very, very much needed. So, probably thanks to tools like BeSavvy, you will be able to gain these skills even faster than before. And you will be able to talk to clients not during your 3rd year as an associate, but as a during your first or second year in the law firm. This is amazing. So focus on what you love, focus on what you are good at, and we at BeSavvy will be doing our job to make sure that you acquire the skills faster and get to very important, very interesting work faster as well.
Thank you. Sounds great. And thank you again for joining me. And yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.